This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/JoelDuggan to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible.
This is the Citadel Cafe.
This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 145 for Wednesday, April 29th, my birthday, 2015. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Joining me tonight for the very first time is a dear friend of mine and co-host on Comics Coast to Coast, the one, the only, Brian Dunaway, also a film sack. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Hi, Joel. It's good to be here, and happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
That's as sing-songy as I'm going to get. I'll tell you another thing, too. This side of the microphone, I don't know, man. It's
that's weird, right?
Doesn't feel right to me.
Me and Matt on Comics Coast to Host notice that whenever you are absent, and we have to try to maintain the energy that you bring to that show, and we're just like, wow, that was a good interview, but that was a different interview. That feels very different. Our listeners are going to be like, what just happened?
Why do you think Tom Racine, my old co-host, had to go somewhere else? He loves me, but he also, I'm sure he was thinking, oh my God, this guy is on crack.
Yeah.
So let's bring it down some. But I'm gonna take the tone of whatever you give me tonight, Joel. I'm gonna bounce it right back at you.
Well, it's gonna be weird for me not to go into comic mode.
Right.
Whenever you're speaking.
and start comics.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Is there a Game of Thrones comic yet? There has to be.
Oh my God, there has to be. There's gotta be a Game of Thrones comic. I know there's a lot of Game of Thrones illustrations out there, one of which I want to talk about in the cool web thingy section of the Citadel Cafe.
Sounds like a tease.
It is a tease.
See, now everybody has to listen to the very end.
All the way through.
All the way through.
Sit back, relax.
Oh, it's going to be a bumpy ride.
Isn't this a character-driven podcast, kind of like the Game of Thrones we're going to be talking about later?
So? Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah,
little
why bit. Not sure? Woo! So,
yeah. It's like right on cue. It's
now?
Like it's the one time. Yeah, they're coming to get me now. They know it's my birthday. I've had a couple beer. They're like, that's it. He's done. He can't podcast. No drinking and podcasting. This is the one. Wow, that is really close.
They're coming really close to your house.
I saw that go by. Normally, that's not a thing. Yes. Normally, I don't have to worry about that on the show, but it was warm in here, so I opened up the window, and that was a bad idea. Oh, well. I live really close to one of the main drags in Dartmouth, and when it rains, it pours, I guess. Hopefully, there won't be a second one.
Right, and I live near a main drag, too, but we call it the Greer Dragway, which is how they talk about it.
And you have to say it that way every time you mention it?
Right, that's how they have it on the radio, on the TV commercials. They come on down this Sunday at the Greer Dragway, and they go into the... But you're actually talking about a road that's busy, not actually a place for racing cars then.
No, this is just it's one of those highways that turns into a city street, you know, like it's that kind of thoroughfare.
Right, right.
But yeah, the high crime area of Canada, as per Phil in the chat room, that's definitely the area that I live in. No, Dartmouth is very quiet and nice. It's why I like it here. But as I mentioned at the top of the show, and as Brian has been so kind to point out, it is my birthday. 36 years young.
Yeah,
today.
That's not bad at all, man. You still got, no. Got time.
I got 4 years left. Yeah. Before the end is nine.
We joke about the 40 years old because it's the top of the hill. And I would normally agree with you. It's just a silly age number, ridiculous. But there are some real things that you have to go through. One of which was a couple years ago. I turned 40 as well. And I went to the eye doctor and she handed me this new test I hadn't seen up until this point in my life. And I held a little eye chart down at about my lap level. And I'm like going through it. And I'm like, she says, read this line. I'm reading the lines. And she says, yeah, you're over 40 now. You're going to need bifocals. I'm like, screw you. If I'd have known this was going to be an old age man test, I wouldn't have taken your stupid card. Threw it in your face.
Yeah, they should have a sense of humor with those cards. It should be, at the very top, it should be titled Old Man Test.
Right. If you are holding this card, guess what?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I haven't reached that point yet. Although I should get my eyes tested. It's been 2 years and that's kind of right on cue. Normally it's around my birthday. I tend to do all that kind of checkup stuff, you know, when you need to. It's always for whatever reason, the birthday always seems to be a health check for me. You know, it's like, how am I feeling? Do I need to lose weight? Should I run more? Maybe I should eat better. You know, all that kind of stuff.
Oh, we all go through that, especially as artists, which we talk about on Comics Coast to Coast all the time. Mm-hmm. There it goes, which is right into the Comics Coast to Coast mode.
It's fine. I don't plug that show enough on here. I mention it, but it doesn't come up enough a lot unless we're talking about like Daredevil or, you know, some other comic related stuff. But yeah, one of the things I wanted to mention at the top of the show that I feel needs to be out there was mentioned briefly last week when my sister was on, and I've been watching, and that is Bloodline on Netflix. Have you watched Bloodline at all yet, Brian?
I have. I don't even know what Bloodline is.
So Kyle Chandler and Ben Mendelsohn, Kyle Chandler, famous for playing the coach on Friday Night Lights.
Right, right. Also, great. I don't watch.
Oh, yeah. Great, great, great actor. Great series, too. He's in this Netflix series, and they play two brothers of a larger family, and the older brother, played by Ben Mendelsohn, is a troublemaker, and he comes back. He's like the black sheep of the family, and I will leave it at that because it is absolutely worth watching.
Wait, I think I have seen one episode of this.
It's really good.
But I was thinking it was called something else.
Yeah, it's definitely called Bloodline. But my sister mentioned it last week, and I've been watching it, and I don't want to get into it for fear of spoiling the experience for people. But it is a genuinely good right. show, and like get you on the edge of your chair in ways that you don't expect. And I'll leave it at that. But very, very good acting, and hats off to both Mendelsohn and Chandler on that show.
Right.
And I mean, all the supporting cast is great, but man,
all these attractive people at the IMDb Bloodline.
Yeah, some of the ladies on the show are pretty attractive, I have to confess. But
all the men are attractive, all the ladies. Now, there is a Sissy Spacek, which, you know, I like her, but.
Yeah, she plays the mom. Right. Brian, she plays the grandmother.
Right. I like it. This is, if it wasn't for the respect I'm getting for the Sissy Spacek, I would almost say this was a WB show.
Yeah, to look at it, sure, but it's a Netflix show. So there's violence and swearing and different situations and adult concepts. It's not a kid show at all. Definitely not family friendly. I would say that you'd want to watch this with high school kids or older.
Right. Hey, my girlfriend made me watch a few episodes of a new TV show that she saw. I think was it on Hulu or Netflix? I can't remember. I have both. But I know what it is. how stupid of me not to remember. But Sudden Recall, Star-Crossed, which has the same name as your comic.
Yes, I have experienced that when I go to hashtag or search for things, and I should be taking advantage of it more, but apparently the show's not very good. I really was hoping it was going to take off, and then there'd be like kind of confusion.
Right, and a little bit of you know, spillover. That'd be great. She started watching this the other day, and I sat down for about 5 minutes, and I was like, wow, this is so drama. I mean, it pretty much is just every teenage drama that you can imagine, but with the twist of having aliens, which don't actually look like aliens. And so I was like, eh. But then she started watching it, and she just got a little further along and started getting some action, and they started intermixing some of the more sci-fi elements. So I might have to go back in and check in again. But you're saying it's the suck, right?
I only have hearsay. I have never seen an episode. I don't have cable, and it wasn't something that I sought out. But my dad, I think, tried to watch it, and he didn't like it. But I mean, he's not the audience for it. He wanted a sci-fi show, like he wanted X-Files or something, and that's not at all what he got.
Wasn't there a TV show with Katherine Heigl a long time ago that was kind of that?
Yes,
that sci-fi.
Yeah,
what was
and it was WB as well. Roswell.
Roswell.
Yeah, there was four of them. I feel like all four of them were aliens or something, or maybe they had an alien experience. I can't remember. But yeah, that was kind of Katherine Heigl's kind of claim to fame. That was a while ago. That was like 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah, that was a real long time ago. It's interesting that you can turn, you can just say, because we have to use our power of our imagination, so we can just go, okay, we've got a romantic kind of drama thing going on, but guess what? Some of these people are aliens. But you know what? The aliens, they look like humans. Trust us. It's there, okay? There's alien stuff happening.
Yeah. Did you watch V when it was on?
Oh, my God, yes. I watched V when it originally came out as the miniseries back in the 80s, and it affected my life so heavily to see sci-fi quality quality sci-fi that was on TV that you only got at the movie theater. And it's crap, but it was still the best thing going because my mom was watching Dallas and, you know, all those nighttime soap opera craps. And this was on, and I'm like, everybody was into it. And I'm like, yeah, this is good stuff.
Yeah, I like the new one.
It only ran for like a season or two, right? Didn't it?
Yeah, it was like canceled? A season or a season and a half. Yeah, it unfortunately got canceled. It was slow. I mean, it suffered from anything that has 26 episodes and is on mainline TV. Is that one, they've got to hammer
ABC?
Yeah, I think so. They've got to hammer the plot into you week after week, so you get really bored with kind of the older things. And then you've got the longer series they have to drag out, you know, all the plots. Like you get one storyline that goes over the 26 episodes, not something that's more condensed. Like when you see something on Netflix that's like 13 episodes, every episode moves the plot forward.
Right.
And I found that V, there was a lot of kind of stagnant.
Yeah, it did. I agree with you on that. I remember when it first started, it was very exciting. The kind of conspiracy things that were going on, and it was interesting. But that's how the miniseries was too. And you know, it was only, I guess, 3 hours or something for the miniseries, and they had a follow up later on for a couple years later, if I remember correctly. But that was probably just enough. Hey, do you miss the miniseries type of thing that we used to have here in the world?
Yeah, well, I'm trying to remember the name of it right now. I'm watching one on Netflix right now, and it's called Jack something.
Do you think that Netflix is maybe the new? You think Netflix is maybe the new way that we consume?
Well,
miniseries?
I mean, this is a BBC series, and it stars the guy that plays Jorah Mormont in Game of Thrones, actually, to kind of segue into what we're going to be talking about tonight. And he plays an Irish retired detective, and he goes into PI work. And he's a drunk, and it's got kind of an edge to it. And it's based on a series of books, and it's really, really good. But it's only got 8 episodes.
Right, right.
Because it was originally meant to be just a miniseries, right?
Right.
Same thing with Sherlock and those stuff that you see.
Oh, man. Darn BBC and their seasons of stuff. I'm like, ooh, I got the whole first season of Sherlock to watch. 3 episodes. What? That's not a season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they're 90 minutes. So.
Right.
But I know what you mean. Like, something that I really enjoy about finding a series on Netflix is you don't have to spend 20 minutes deciding what to watch. You know, for the next few days, hopefully longer, you've got the opportunity to just kind of like plop down and just hit next. You don't have to really think about it. That's what I've been doing with Bloodline. I've been watching basically one a night. I think this weekend I watched 2 Saturday and Sunday, but for the most part, it's just been one an evening, and it's been nice to kind of spread it out. It's a show that makes you want to know what happens next, but it's not so cliffhanger-like that you just have to hit play. Like, it's okay to kind of walk away and kind of digest the show that you just watched.
Did you know that I had not seen a single episode of Game of Thrones until about fall of last year?
You really?
I had not seen a single episode. Owned all the books, had not read a single one of them. Kept meaning to get around to it, knew it was going to be good. I was totally glad that I binged it, though, because it was so much freaking fun. I watched the first season by myself, then my girlfriend was like, caught the end of the first season. She's like, no, you have to go back to the beginning and watch it. I was like, fine, I don't care. I love this show. This show is fantastic. I'll watch that happen again, all over.
I've seen the first two seasons twice through, yeah.
Right, right. I think I've seen the first two seasons all the way through as well. And I think we started going back on season three, but I don't think we completed that one. And then, of course, now we're watching live, which is painful because, you know, you watch and it's 60-something minutes, 60 was like 65 minutes or something.
Mm.
And then at the end of it, it's just like, eh, I just ran into a brick wall. I have to wait until next Monday?
Yeah.
Not cool.
Yeah, and it was like that, especially with, I want to say it was the third season. That was really kind of episode to episode. You just really had to find out what was going to happen. Right. And I thought that was, I felt that lag of having season one and two at my fingertips, and then season three when it was live, having to wait until Monday was brutal. I mean, a good point, I guess, to jump into Game of Thrones and what we're going to be talking about this week. If you're new to the Citadel Cafe, folks, this is where we spoil the living crap out of the latest episode of Game of Thrones. This is going to be season 5, episode 3. Show title was High Sparrow. And just to kind of give you guys a quick kind of rundown of what happened this week, and maybe a reminder if you happen to watch on Sunday night, it was Marjorie, freshly wed to Tommen, manipulates her husband into dispatching Cersei to Castle Rock. Peter Baelish conducts Sansa Stark to Winterfell to cement an alliance with Roos Bolton through her marriage to his son, Ramsay Bolton. To adapt in the House of Black and White, Arya rids herself of all of her personal effects, save Needle, which she hides in a pile of rocks.
Ooh.
Yeah, I know, right? At Castle Black, Jon Snow refuses Stannis' proposition to become the head of Winterfell and stays at Castle Black as Lord Commander, where he quickly, takes out justice on Jaenys Slynt, who refuses to be dispatched to rebuild Greyguard, and right. Snow executes him. Lancel finds the High Septon, compromised in Littlefinger's brothel, and in a purge, Cersei decides to seek out the High Sparrow. And arriving in Volantis, Tyrion visits a brothel and is abducted by Jorah Mormont. So there's a lot of brothels in this one.
Yeah, and
this right off the kicker.
This is the first episode this season that I really noticed in the opening where they give you a little warning. It's like, hey, there's going to be some violence. There's going to be some, you know, language and nudity. Now, I'm not sure if there was nudity very much in the previous couple episodes this season, but there was definitely plenty of nudity in this one.
Yeah, whenever they go into the brothels, there's a lot of cheeks hanging out and a lot of boobs hanging out in the time. The thing that I don't even notice it anymore in Game of Thrones, and maybe it's because it's a period piece. Mm-hmm. Like, it would be a little bit different if it was set in modern day. Like, you'd probably notice the nudity more. But it just kind of blows over now. I don't really notice it. Going all the way through, like, I mean, so you're fresh out of the first four seasons. Like, how has the season struck you so far, man?
Slow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's been right. And the reason why, and this is fine. This is what I'm taking away from Game of Thrones. Where we're at right now is we've already lost the parents, everybody's parents that were any kind of leaders have been dispatched. All the first children, they've been dispatched. Now what we're left with is middle children and bastard childs.
It's true, right?
Right. So I figure we're probably going to end up wiping those guys out. And then finally, at the end of the bloodline, the youngest kids will eventually rise to power. But that's kind of, we're kind of like in a middle child kind of area right now. So you got to kind of expect a little bit of, a little bit of transition.
You're expecting more from Bran and Rickon.
Oh, absolutely. I haven't even seen anything from us. Like, where you guys at?
Yeah, it's been three episodes now. At the first episode, I kind of predicted that in episode two, we'd get more Arya and then more Bran, but we haven't seen Bran at all yet this season.
None. No Bran. I'm getting constipated from the no Bran.
Yeah, Bran. And I don't go around digging in the news site, so I don't know whether he's not in this season. Like, I'm not sure what's going on, but because I don't want any spoilers, but I hope that we at least get to see something.
I do too. He's one of my favorite characters, and we usually tie it in with the White Walkers, which winter is coming. My God, you've been promising for how many seasons now?
Yep.
Winter is coming.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just my ignorance. Now, if you're listening, you're going, hey, Brian, you read the books, and it says this, this, and this, or spoiler, this, this, and that. I'm with Joel. I've been trying so hard to not hear anything about what's upcoming. As a matter of fact, I didn't get to watch this until Monday night. And the first thing I saw when I went on Twitter Monday was Game of Thrones was trending. So I was like, close.
Yeah.
So if you didn't see me on Twitter Monday, it's because it's like Game of Thrones. No. Uh-uh.
Yeah, I have to stay off. I'm not so bad with Twitter. I tend to be able to spot some of the stuff. And there's not a lot of visual spoilers on Twitter right now for Game of Thrones. However, Game of Thrones on Facebook, people tend to post like screenshots or promotional shots. And sure, technically it's after the show has aired. Although people and networks do it with shows that are coming up too. They're like, hey, The Flash is going to happen tomorrow night. And it's a picture of like the fight or the villain that they're using in that episode. It's like, I don't want to know now. I want to know in the show when he comes around a corner or she, you know. And that's like I was saying to my sister last week, the moment where Daenerys pets Drogon at the end of last episode, that was spoiled for me. I didn't know he was going to be in it. Yeah. Well, I didn't realize he was going to be in it. And I was just flipping through Facebook, just like a normal idiot on Monday. And sure enough, it was a picture of Daenerys reaching out to touch Drogon's nose. I was like, I didn't even, you know, I it's one of those moments that's, it's a wow moment. And you don't want that to be spoiled. So you really kind of have to hide under a rock.
Who freaking spoiled that? Was that official stuff coming down through HBO? Or was
that or a fan page. I'm not really sure. It's so hard to tell who shared what. Like I just, I clicked and blocked and hit it quite quickly. So you know what I'm doing? Really check, but
do you know what I'm doing more and more of when I am super busy? I once upon a time used to turn on your browser and you would go, okay, I don't want to display any images, and it's because there wasn't enough bandwidth to really do what you needed to do.
Right.
Now I actually browse in Google Chrome sometimes with my images turned off because I still need to get information, but I don't want to be distracted by any clickbait. I don't want to be distracted by any images. And 90% of the time, the stuff that distracts me is totally worthless. It ends up taking me down a rabbit hole, and I don't need any of it, and it has no value at all. So I'm finding that I'm enjoying the internet when I'm trying to be productive by just saying no to all images.
All the
images. I can still get information, but no images.
Oh, right on. That's a good idea.
It's saving me a lot of time.
Yeah. Just don't do that, people, when I'm trying to share my comic. That would be bad.
Right. See, that's how Twitter is, because I don't need to see. I enjoy Twitter, but sometimes people's avatars and then will be distracting. And sometimes, you know, you'll have the sponsored ads and crap that Twitter posts in there. And at first, it's like just clickbait, because you think, hey, look, this looks interesting. No, that's just a bunch of freaking hoo-ha. And so you don't see none of that stuff.
I'm using TweetDeck on the Mac desktop, and I don't think I see the inline ads. But I don't hover over Twitter all day long. I check it when I've got replies, and then while I'm there, I'll scroll through the newsfeed and see if there's anything that grabs my interest. But I don't spend all day on it. But one of the things that I really liked about this week, though, on Game of Thrones was some of the, I guess, more somber moments for the Stark characters. The two that I pull away from are Arya and Jon, and I thought that the moment when Arya has to get rid of all of her possessions to really commit herself to the House in Black and White was just really, really well acted. And then that moment when she's holding the sword, and I have to confess that I remember what she did with it from the books. So I knew that she wasn't going to drop it in, but still just the emotion behind it. You're just kind of like, to me, I was just like, I hope they didn't change this in the show. I hope she just don't drop it in the water in the show, because don't do that. But it was so sweet to see the emotional attachment that she had to the sword with all the training that she's had, the fact that it was a gift from John. You know, I thought that was really, really well done.
I think it was great. It and I was almost screaming at the TV myself, going, "Don't you do it? Don't you do it? Don't you even think about throwing that in there? You know how much how important that is to you." And I'm like, "So yeah, I was totally." But I also felt that little bit of they're really good. Game of Thrones has been really good about playing on my different emotions, and you know, you feel both uncomfortable and you feel like you're going to fail your training if you don't throw this away. You'll never be fully trained. You'll always be flawed. But no, don't throw that away. That's part of you. That's like one of the most important things. It's a possession, I know, but it means so much more.
Yeah.
And And there was a lot of emotion to that. She did great.
Well, especially with the way that she was trained. It's like because she's mm-hmm. so tiny, because it's a small sword, it's like an extension of her arm. Like, it's not a weapon unto itself. It's just kind of like an extension of her intent.
Right.
Which I think is
plus she can decapitate stuff like nobody's business, like that
pigeon. Yeah, pigeon pie.
They don't ever talk about that in the Game of Thrones. Spoiler. A pigeon takes it straight to the neck.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that was it was really cleverly done too, where they just get out of frame, and then you know there's either like a little air cannon or there's some guy just out of shot that has to throw feathers up just as she swipes by.
Was it season 3 when we chopped the horse's head off? This was at least as traumatic as that.
Oh man, in the lists, I think that might have been season 1.
Was it really season 1? It might have been.
When the mountain gets dismounted and he takes it out on the horse, that was bloody.
That was vicious.
Really, really bloody. Speaking of heads being chopped off, that was probably one of the biggest moments from this show was John coming down on Janus Slynt. Like, how did that make you feel?
Well, it's funny because you're thinking, hey, he's such a dick. I don't even care if he does kill him. But there's a couple of things that you're going, yeah, but Jon Snow hasn't crossed. He's that innocent, you know. Hmm. He hasn't crossed over into that full grown man. And at this point, I've always kind of let him, you know, have a pass on some stuff because he's still essentially good. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And this doesn't make him bad, but it does make him hard. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So he's kind of, when he did that, and oh my God, the guy was just begging, the way he was begging and just apologizing and just pouring out, you know, the worst of himself right there at the very end made me feel, you know, squirmy and like, oh my God. I could totally relate. If I was going to be, you know, have my head chopped off, you know, would I be able to, you know, do that brave thing where it's like, screw you guys, screw all of you? No, I'm not equipped for that. We don't live in a world where that is, you know, is something that we have to face every day, where you think about your last words. Do you think about your last words, Joel?
No. No, because the birthdays haven't climbed so high that's a thing yet.
Right.
No, it hasn't gone there. For me, I felt the same way. Like when he was kind of whimpering and whining and stuff like that, it was one of those things where, knowing John as we do through the show, for me, I mean, this is one of these moments where I couldn't remember what happened. And I'm just like, don't do it. Like, just like not chop his head off. Don't back down. I was like, don't let him go. Don't let him whimper his way out of this, because it sucks that you got to kill him, but those are the rules. And if you don't, then you're going to lose the respect of like half of the Night's Watch. And what I was thinking, because I knew that you could tell that it was hard for John, mm-hmm. but what I was hearing in my head was the speech that Ned Stark gave in like episode 1, season 1,
right,
when there was a deserter from the Night Watch. And he had to kill him, because that's the penalty for deserting the watch. Even though this kid was running for his life, fleeing from the White Walkers, he executed himself. And he was saying, like, if you're going to be the authority in your realm, you're the one that has to carry out the sentence. Like, you have to weigh that on your shoulders. And man, could you ever see that weight on John? Right. It was this split second right before, because he came down quick. There was no holding above his head and thinking. Like, he had the sword down by his side for the longest time, and it wasn't until the last second that he almost lashed out and took the guy's head off. But you could see right before he did that, the kind of a sigh where you could see the shoulders just kind of take that burden before he took him out, which I thought was, I'm glad that he did it, because I didn't like the guy at all. Go ahead.
Yeah, he had to. And you didn't like him, and there's a reason why you didn't like him. And this is one thing that almost every week me and my girlfriend have to go through, because there's so many characters. Sometimes you forget who did what to who and who wronged who. And I kept trying to remember. I'm like, did this guy deserve it? And I did a little searching, and yes, he did. I had forgotten that he was one of the people that apprehended Ned in the city to be beheaded. Mm-hmm. So he betrayed Ned John doesn't know this. He doesn't have this knowledge, but as audience member, we do. And we know that he's a dick and he deserves to have his head chopped off. I guess that's how you would say it. I guess that's pretty insensitive considering this is one of the things that Kit Harington talked about, who's the actor who plays Jon Snow. He talked about this week that was really hard when they filmed that last year because, you know, there's all these extremists who are beheading people in the real world.
Right.
And so it's kind of hard to put that into something that's considered entertainment.
Yeah. No, I can see that. I know, it's funny. I never thought about some of the conflicts that are going on in the world now and how they might relate to Game of Thrones.
Right.
So, and I mean, I'm thinking about it as I'm watching Game of Thrones, not when they would be filming.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I imagine that'd be pretty interesting. You know, as an actor.
Right. I'm not going to speak to it too much, but you know, as far as is it's very vicious. And it's a very personal thing when someone's head is removed from their body like this as a way to kill somebody. But it's also it's probably one of the more humane ways. I mean, it's probably a lot quicker than suffering through a gunshot wound or something like that. Or I can't speak to all of them. I don't know. I've never experienced them. But I have to think it's really, if you stacked up all the ways you can kill somebody, I mean, it's reviled. People hate it, and they think it. And it's such an insult the way it's in the fact that it's done. But really, I mean, the end result is you're dead. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Quite quickly.
Right. So what? I wonder what in our minds makes this like so much worse. You know, it's like
I think it's because it's something that I learned about. In another HBO series, actually, Rome.
Right.
They talk a lot in Rome about a clean death.
Mm-hmm.
And it's where if you are dying with honor, if you're like a legionnaire or something like that, and you're captured, technically they still give you a pretty clean death. And they stab you down through the back of the neck. And it's basically like down through the heart and the lungs. And then they pull the sword out. And you're done in like seconds. But your body, outside of that scar at the back of your neck, like there's no real evidence that you've kind of withstood any major injury. Whereas when you're decapitated, it's kind of hard to have like a wake or a funeral. Like it's, you know, it becomes a very difficult sort of thing for people to then, if it was a situation where the body was available, to then pay respects. And I feel like that's probably why we think it's so brutal, is because it
mangles the body.
It mangles the last memory that everybody has of you on the planet, right? Mm-hmm, it's like, no, you're not thinking about that person. The last thing that you remember and what's going to stick with your mind is their stump, you know, not their head on their shoulders or stuff like that. Like, because I would imagine, like, if you were, well, for example, like Sansa and some other people that watched Ned get beheaded in King's Landing,
right?
Like that, being witness to something like that of someone that you care about, I mean, that would be something that you would never, ever forget.
Right.
Yeah. Versus, not that you'd forget someone having a heart attack and keeling over, but I think that would just kind of stick with you longer.
Right. I think you're right, because it changes the appearance of what we see as being human, which is, you know, a body that is with all its parts.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So I guess that when you stop someone's heart, whether it be through stabbing, shooting, or that kind of thing, I guess it's a little bit different. Plus, we all, you know, understand that the brain is in the head, and you don't want to separate that from the body. That's no good.
Yeah.
You don't want to do that. You might want to keep that. I got another question for you too. While we're talking on the issue of deeper questions, Jon Snow gave Janice a moment to say his last words, and of course, Janice used that time to beg for mercy. What do you think you would have some last words if you were facing that dire situation where you're about to be executed? And do you think it would be anything coherent?
I think that I would probably be so scared that I'd be just silent. I don't know that I would have anything. I think the only reason that Janice Slint like lashed out like that in fear was because he's a coward. Like that's the role that he's supposed to play. Mm-hmm. And because he's a coward, he lashed out like that. If it had been reverse, if it had been Alistair Thorne on the block,
Right.
I don't know what kind of final words he would have said to John, but it would probably just be along the lines of "see you in hell." Like, you know, it wouldn't be anything. Poignant. It wouldn't be revealing. It wouldn't be anything like that. It would just be like gruff and manly, or, you know, "I hope you can live with this, you little shit." You know, like that. You know, it wouldn't be anything really profound. You know, to put somebody else in that. In that situation. I don't really know. I don't think I would say anything.
Right. I thought about it because I was like, I'm a very empathetic person. So even when I see characters like this destroyed in such a negative manner too, because, you know, unlike Ned, who kind of did it for his family, and he asked, but, you know, it wasn't going to work out, and he had to degrade himself, but he still did it for his family. Whereas it was Janice who were obviously considering a coward, only cares about himself in life and being afraid. And I tried to think, I'm like, what would I say? Because do you have any last words? I don't think that was ever meant for, hey, why don't you make some kind of profound statement? I think it was originally addressed to people to go, hey, you know, do you have any last requests? Like, would you like us to send a letter to your mom? Or would you like us to do, you know, that? But then we've turned it into Hollywood, whereas it has to have this profound, dramatic meaning, which is you know, fine. That's what it's supposed to be. But in the really real world, you know, I was trying to think, what would I say to those people? It's like, you need to, my PIN code to my bank account is this. Please pass that on to my, you know, my kids. And, you know, this is this. And this is where I kept that at. That would probably be my last words. Very, very formal. And very, you know, taking care of business, I think, would be my last words. Plus, please don't do it.
Yeah.
Are you sure you want to kill me? Please don't do it.
Yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, futilely convince me not to take off your head, and then I'm going to kill you anyway. Phil Rude in the chat room was mentioning that he saw that Jon Snow carrying out the decapitation was a mirror, like I said, of the first episode. But it was an interesting way for the show to illustrate that Jon Snow is still Stark's son, even though he did not go back to Winterfell.
Right.
You know, like it's almost like, you know, now Ned Stark is kind of carrying on those traditions, but at the Wall.
Right.
That's an interesting way to look at it too.
But Sansa headed back to old Winterfell thanks to Mr. Littlefinger.
Oh, I could throw that guy off a bridge. Like every other episode, I just want to strangle him and hang him out to dry. I went out to brunch this morning with my mom, and we were talking about Game of Thrones because I've got her and my stepdad into it.
Oh,
and,
that's great.
Yeah, and so the like word for word, she's like, poor Sansa hooked up with the Boltons. I hope she is vindictive enough to figure out a way to kill them all. Like, it's like, even my mom is just like, like Littlefinger and Roose and Ramsay Bolton. Like, I just hope that Sansa just finds a way to just to kill them all. Right. I was like, oh my God.
You know, but that move made me actually go back and go, you know, Littlefinger is. He's necessary. He is one of the chess piece movers. He is one of the people who makes things happen in this world. And he has very little maybe family power, but he's one of the people that really has a huge impact on things through various positioning and moving of people. And at first, of course, I thought Littlefinger was just a perv. He wanted Sansa because he wanted he wanted her mom. And so this was like a thing that he could do and go, okay, well, you know, I couldn't have the mom, so I'll have the daughter, and that'll be close enough. And I thought, dirty old pervert man with your little fingers. I was like, you jerk. And then, but then I'm like, oh, he's going to use her to position her to seek her revenge. And so it's kind of like, it's almost a payback to the mother, but maybe, you know, I can't tell if he's doing it purely for himself or if he's doing it a little bit because of his love for Sansa's mom.
Yeah, I feel like Littlefinger to me doesn't do anything without any kind of massive personal gain. So by arranging the betrothal between Sansa and Ramsay, who we all know is an absolute psychopath, you know, he obviously has some sort of long-term plan. And he mentions that, I think, in the show where he's like, because he's now the Lord of the Vale, because he married Lysa Arryn, the unification of the Vale and the North will give them the power eventually to control Westeros. And the last time that the Vale and the North were united is when Robert Baratheon overthrew the Targaryen regime, which was right. Daenerys' dad, the Mad King. So it took the North and the Eyrie to unite along with the Baratheons to then right. overthrow. So I feel like Littlefinger is just, you know, he obviously wants to try and repeat history. And he wants to be at the top, you know, in the top tier of three kingdoms when that happens. And he's positioned himself fairly well. But I really have to give props to, and I forget her name, the girl that plays Sansa, because she's got this, like, she's scared at first, and then it's almost like something clicks in her where she's either like, well, I've got no control over this right now, I might as well just accept it and see what I can do with it. Or, unbeknownst to us, she's slowly starting to see the chess pieces and the moves, like, mm-hmm. six moves ahead. And then,
right.
like, and then she's, like, planning. And maybe, like, what my mom says is, like, she's trying to figure out a way to seek her revenge on everybody.
Right, right. And at this point, I think she's mostly just... I think she's just mostly like someone who's been abused, because she is very much someone who has been abused. I mean, she was very arrogant in her protected world when her dad was alive, and of course that led to, you know, the loss of her innocence, and then she was straight into these very violent relationships, and now she just seems like she's afraid to do anything because she's afraid that things are going to get worse. But I'm really interested when I saw her go into that room. I'm like, wait, was that her room back when she lived there? Would she request her room, or would that be weird? And I was thinking, why am I thinking about that? Who cares?
I don't know. I thought that moment was poignant when the servant said, "Welcome back." The North remembers. Right. I mean, it really is a clear message saying that the people are loyal to you, not the Boltons. So I feel like that might be kind of a little bit of foreshadowing as to what we could possibly expect from Winterfell. I didn't recognize Winterfell at all, so I don't right. remember my way around.
It was all burn up.
Yeah.
Now Sansa, her character is one of the few that's kind of going outside the boundaries of the book though, right? Isn't that kind of what people are saying? I haven't read the book, so I'm not sure about that, but I've heard
it is certainly moving a lot faster.
Right.
The hard part with the books, which I know I've mentioned on the show before, is that 4 and 5 both occur at the same time, but mm-hmm. you have to read them in order. So there was a huge chunk of time when I was following a lot of other stories and a lot of other things, and then you go back and you follow what's happening with Sansa. And it was so long reading that it feels like longer in time, but it's not. It's really supposed to be simultaneous. Mm-hmm. So I don't really recall from the books. I know that in the books she goes with Littlefinger and she does end up at the Eyrie, but there's a stop in between where they spend a lot of time at his homestead. It's his original place, and she poses as like his daughter or something for the long time. It's where she dyes her hair. Like there's all these changes, and that all seems to have happened kind of between seasons, which is fine.
That was like an episode, wasn't it?
Like, yeah, maybe like, or it was mentioned or something. Yeah. Like it's right. very, very quick. And I feel like that was a long part of the book, and that's where you get a lot of the relationship building between Sansa and Littlefinger, with where she is now. I think she does go to Winterfell, but I don't remember all the details, and I don't know in the books when she's at Winterfell if everybody knows that she's Sansa. Like I feel right. like in the books she might be under a different name. Like she might be able to maintain that disguise with having grown older and darker hair, and that might be just something that you can't communicate in a TV show quite as easily without changing actors, right? Like in the book, she starts off as like a 13 or 14 year old. Arya is only like 9 or 10. So by the time all this happens when she's 18, theoretically you could say like, all right, well, if no one's seen her for 10 years, then maybe she right. could pull this off. But in the TV show, they all started off a lot older. And then so instead of 14, 15, Sansa was, or 13, 14 when she started, she was 15, 16. Now she's like 20. So, you know, she kind of looks the same. There's not really going to be a huge change. So unless you're wearing a mask, you're not going to be able to really hide your identity. So it doesn't really bother me. I found the passages in the books for her slow. So I feel like what they're doing in the television show is probably going to be better for everybody. It's probably going to move things along a little bit faster.
Hmm.
That would be my 2 cents. But feel free to write thecitadelcafe@gmail.com and tell me that, one, I'm wrong, or two, point out what really did happen with Sansa in the books. As long as it's, you know, not too spoilery, then I'll relay that information on the show.
I like it, little finger.
Jeez. Well, one of the things that, you know, to lighten the mood here a little bit, I mean, we had beheadings, we had all kinds of dark stuff happening. Tommen and Margaery and... Tyrion and Varys, I think, were the comedy relief
until the very end.
Yeah, for this show. I mean,
kidnapping.
Yeah, Tyrion and Varys were the comedy relief. I mean, I really enjoy the banter that they have. But there was this beautiful, sunshiny moment, kind of in the middle of the show, where Tommen and Margaery get married,
right,
and then have spend the night together. Obviously, Tommen's first time. With Margaery, who is stunning. and there's a huge age difference there, too. She looks like she's, you know, supposed to be kind of portrayed in her early 20s. This kid looks like he's about 15. and he just had the time of his life. And I really enjoyed how genuine their relationship seems to be.
Right. Of course, Margaery's in it to win it. So
yes,
she's,
yeah.
But she's very, oh, wow. But you're right. It brought a lot of humor. But this one probably showed me more about what's going to happen between Margaery and Cersei.
Hmm.
The way that was acted was freaking phenomenal, because on the surface you could certainly go, well, she said these words, but man, There was a fire raging under that you could just feel, and it is just amazing. I don't want to sound like a sexist or anything here, but I'm gonna say from experience from my mom and stuff, when she's talked to girlfriends and that kind of stuff, I've seen my mom have a conversation, been sitting between the two people having a conversation, and then leave the conversation. And then, you know, my mom and my girlfriend tell me two totally different stories about what each of them implied. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so, man, this felt like that.
It's oh, absolutely.
Like, it was like, oh my God, this is totally right on the surface stuff that if you were standing in the room and you didn't know there was supposed to be some kind of tension, you would think that was the most normal conversation in the world. But in reality, them's fighting words.
Yeah,
you know, it was intense.
Yeah, well, it's because Margaery is aware of the relationship that Cersei has with all of her kids, you know, and how possessive she is, and knowing now that Margaery has the king's ear because she's his wife, mm-hmm. and he's a 15-year-old kid with a beautiful bride. I mean, like he would, you know, he's obviously head over heels for her. You know, being able to then orchestrate, like, hey, if I just merely suggest to my husband that you go back to Casterly Rock, he's probably going to send you there. So you
because
might
you know why tip-toe. I'm putting out.
Yeah, precisely. Precisely. And I did find it a little bit weird. I mean, she was obviously showboating for Cersei, but she was talking about like how long and how many times they did it and blah, blah, blah. And, like all the schoolgirl giggly stuff around the table. I thought I didn't necessarily need that. But the conversation, the face-to-face conversation with Sansa and Margaery, I thought was really good. I'm not entirely sure how they're going to play Cersei this season too. Ryan mentioned that he feels that Cersei this season, we're going to see her downfall. Like we're going to see the rug kind of pulled from under her. And I mean, I recall what happens to Cersei, so I can't really get into it on the show without spoiling anything for people. But I'm very curious to see how they go about it. It's been so long now, I don't remember all the details. I just remember what the end, you know, sort of looks like. So it's going to be an interesting season, I think. And I like the different religion stuff that they're pulling into it now. It's interesting because there's just so many different faiths in this Westeros sort of imaginary world that it's going to be really interesting.
There really is, and it's one of the more, and they've explored it more, I think, this season so far than they really explored in the past. They've mentioned it, and they've mentioned that it's been an influence, but I think they're really digging into it, including all the way to the shaming of the priest of the seven gods, or, you know, because that was some really weird stuff in that brothel that he was in.
Oh yeah.
And so, you know, he had the different women posing as the different gods, and I don't know what god is the one of Heron Face, but you know,
yeah,
I was like, can she see anything? She's gonna get hurt.
yeah.
But then, of course, the Sparrow, Sparrow and High. What was the title of this one?
High Sparrow was the name of the episode. Yeah.
Yeah, High Sparrow was in reference to the character that was introduced, which is referred to as the High Sparrow, and they're trying to expose the corruption in the church, and so they pull him out of the brothel, the priest who's in the brothel doing his deal, you know, getting it on with the pretend gods, and they drag him out into the streets and make him show everybody his junk, which was quite disturbing. I did not need to see that, but it was kind of amusing too, because every time he would go to cover himself up, it would smack him on the butt, and he'd have to pick his hands up, and it was
yeah,
it was odd.
Yeah, Jonathan Pryce plays the High Sparrow, the guy that Cersei seeks out. Oh, he's so good. I immediately recalled him, and I was trying to remember what it was from. I can hear the voice, like I can hear the delivery, and it took me a minute to realize that he is in the Pirates of the Caribbean. He plays the main love interest's dad.
Right.
At the very beginning. But he's got Orlando a lot of...
Blooms? Is that Orlando Bloom's dad?
Not his dad.
That...
No, the girl's dad.
Ah, okay.
Keira Knightley's dad. He plays her. He plays her in the Pirates. He's in two of them out of the three, I think. But yeah, he has that kind of wavering kind of voice delivery. He's got that concerned father kind of note to him. And I thought that was pretty cool. And it's nice to see another great actor join the cast. And I'm curious because he seems to have that whole, like, you know, I gave my shoes away because there was a man that needed them. And it feels like he's just got nothing but good and sacrifice in front of him. And I'm just wondering how that's going to play into the exact opposite, which is like the sept, the seven gods, seems to be very corrupt and rich and lavish as far as their heads of church and state are.
Right.
I'm curious to see
that's supposed to be what his characters, but I haven't read the books. And I don't know how far.
Yeah, no, that's precisely what he's supposed to be, the counter to it. Yeah, it's supposed to be like the other voice. And that's where I'm curious, because it's hard to catch, but Cersei locked up the other guy.
Right.
She confessed it right at the end.
Now, did she lock him up, or was he, I wasn't quite sure who was on Cersei's I don't know exactly what you call the character, but he's, I guess, the medicine man or the...
Oh, yeah, the other minister. Yeah, I don't remember his name either.
But he had somebody covered up in a blanket. I wasn't sure if that, that was supposed to just be funny because he was there, or if that was actually supposed to be that character.
I think it's supposed to, judging from the shape of the blanket, I think it's supposed to be the former septon. The former High Septon, yeah. So I'm not exactly sure what Cersei's got going on with this maester. This is the fun part of me not remembering, you know, from the books, and that's why I'm so careful with spoilers this season, is because I'm really in uncharted territory with how they're handling stuff on the show, which is nice. And I guess the last scene that you mentioned with Tyrion and Varys at the brothel, with Tyrion being kidnapped. I feel like that happened really quick. Do you feel like they kind of just were at the brothel for like 5 minutes, and then it's like no sooner does he leave the box that he's not supposed to leave that he gets kidnapped?
Right. And you know, they really said all they needed to say. We've seen him drink a million times. So I guess we've seen the brothel. So I guess we really didn't need much more information than to see that he had much regret because he addressed a prostitute, and the prostitute was very skeptical and similar to his lover that he killed back in King's Landing. So pretty much that was it. That's all I guess that's really all we needed to know from that bit. And so then, yes, he was kidnapped by the return of the character, oh, what is his name? I can't recall the guy, the character's name. The one that was
The kidnapper?
Yeah, the kidnapper.
Jorah Mormont.
That's it.
He used to be Daenerys' right hand.
Daenerys, right.
And he's the son of the old bear, the guy that used to be the Lord Commander.
Right. And so he said he was taking him to the queen. Mm. And I was like, okay, so which queen is mm-hmm. the question?
Yeah.
So we know who we kind of ended our relationship with the character at a question mark anyway, going, okay, who do you serve?
Mm-hmm.
And so now we've got, because we know that he doesn't necessarily subscribe to the idea that someone who is in power is the actual queen, is who he deems worthy to be his queen. So
yeah,
it's like, okay, so which queen are you talking about, homeboy?
Yeah. I think that's the question on everybody's right. mind too. Yeah, no, I agree. I'm looking, it's the one thing that I think I'm following more closely this season are the Tyrion and Varys storyline. Mm-hmm. And Jon. Those are the ones that seem to interest me the most. Arya is great, but I think it's going to be pretty slow. But Tyrion and Varys and Jon are the two main storylines that I feel are really compelling this season.
Now, Arya is of course with the man with no name, and she's hanging out and doing her thing, and of course, I'm with you. It's very slow because it's supposed to be a mystery to her. Her training is very, you know, Karate Kid. You know, it's like, hey, don't ask me any questions. You'll get there.
Yeah.
When we get there. And it's like, okay. So in the meantime, just do what we say. Ask no questions. And part of that is what appears to be men going into this chamber and then possibly drinking something and then dying. And no explanation for that, if it's some kind of sacrifice, if it's related to the religion. I don't know. I'm not reading the mm-hmm. books. And so now she's washing what we assume are dead people. Maybe they're not dead. Maybe they're just knocked out. Maybe they're going some kind of spiritual journey. I don't know. There's a lot of questions, and no answers are coming anytime soon, I'm guessing.
Yeah, I feel like we're going to have to go on that journey with Arya. You know, like we have just as many questions as she does, and that we are going to have to go through the, you know, that slow, just do what you're told, just kind of, well, there's a line from the show, every man must serve or everyone must serve.
Right.
And I think that's the idea, is like, in order to do what you want to do, you're going to have to carry out orders. And first you have to just listen and sweep the floor until we tell you to stop sweeping the floor,
or
washing dead people. Yeah, that was creepy.
Now, I'm sure the book, see, there's something you can do in books you can't do in TV. You can say, hey, there's a 9-year-old washing a man's penis, and you can get away with it. You can't actually show that on TV, so I'm like, yeah. I'm a little disturbed to read the books. I'm not sure how detailed
Mark
gets into that.
I don't recall anything really awkward. Anything, I would say, they get into a lot about her senses, like her sight and her smell and her hearing and all that kind of stuff. If anything, they describe the smell.
Hmm.
I think more than anything in the books, if I recall. But it's all kind of like steps along the journey. They don't really kind of dwell on washing people very much. They dwell on the people dying in the empty room, though. They explain a lot more about that. And that, again, it's one of those things that's a little bit better in the books than just watching someone come up, have a whisper in a corner, and then have all that. The guy keels over and then that's it. Whereas in the books, you get the inner monologue from Arya. Like, you get to hear what she's thinking when she's watching that happening. And so I find that some scenes, like the quiet scenes with Arya, are more descriptive in the book because you're getting kind of her perception, whereas that all has to be acted. Unless she's got someone to talk to on screen, you're not going to get a whole lot. And I think that's might be where the frustration comes in. Mm. Right on. Well, do you have any final thoughts for this episode, for this week?
Well, you know, I'm excited because this was probably the more exciting of the episodes so far this season. I'm looking forward to next week. HBO is I'm watching this on HBO To Go or HBO Go, however they call it now. And so I'm watching it that way. And every week at the end of the show, they kind of do that whole next week on the Game of Thrones. And I'm like, shut up. I don't want to know. Quick.
Yeah. I shut it off as soon as the credits roll. I like to listen to the song, but I'm quick. I've got my hand on the controller. I've got my hand on the controller in case they run into that. So the way that I watch it, I tend not to have that pre and post roll, which is nice.
Right.
Because, I mean, every once in a while, I like to see the last time on Game of Thrones, especially if they're giving you a flashback from like season two, from something you might not remember. That's actually quite helpful. But the end of the show with next week, no time for that.
Right. Don't do that to me, because because all you're gonna do is you're gonna show me some misdirection. You're gonna show me somebody leaning into stabbing somebody. Psych, they didn't stab anybody. Don't do that to me. I don't need that kind of pressure.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear you. Right on, we can go into this week's Internet Minute. This is, of course, sponsored by Tweaked Audio. You can visit tweakedaudio.com for high-performance, noise-reducing earbuds. Use the code TCC at checkout to get free shipping and 30% off your entire order. That's tweakedaudio.com, and the code is TCC. Well, my Internet Minute this week comes from my sister. She sent this to me in an email with the simple exclamation mark, Internet Minute. That's it. That's all she said. It is a Sesame Street spoof. It's called The Avengers: Age of Bon Bon. It is bloody hilarious. Cookie Monster plays Dr. Brownie, or Dr. Banner. The other Avengers are filled out by kind of nondescript Disney, not Disney, well, I guess they are Disney technically, but Muppet characters. Iron Man becomes Onion Man, Captain America Cauliflower, Black Bean Widow, Zucchini was my favorite pun of all of them, and of course the Mighty Thor becomes the Mighty Corn. Nice. And they're all fighting a spaceship chocolate chip cookie that's coming to desert the entire city, and they have to teach Cookie Monster or Dr. Brownie how to focus.
Right.
It is a brilliant 5-minute short. I really, really enjoyed it. If you are enjoying the Sesame Street stuff, and if you want to watch it with your kids, it's one of those things that you will be laughing harder than they will because of all the pun jokes and the Avengers jokes. And they've been doing this a lot. I don't have the link with me right now, but there was another one linked right after this, which I'm going to save for next week. And that is, it was a Grover Bluejoy and the Game of Chairs spoof that they did, and it's a Game of Thrones spoof that Sesame Street did. So check out the Sesame Street YouTube channel. I've linked it in the show notes, and it's worth checking out. They've got some funny stuff.
I like it. I'm checking it out now.
Yeah.
All right. Is it my turn for Internet Minute 2?
It is.
Do I have 30 seconds or do I have a full minute?
No, whatever you want to do.
Yeah, okay, fine. All right. I've
never thought about the time.
Right. It's just a name, man. Don't take it so literal.
Yeah.
All right. Now, you know, I'm really trying to gear back into the Game of Thrones. You know, it's been coming on for the last 3 weeks. So I was doing, I forget what it was, maybe it was on Facebook, but I saw someone posted a thread for Disney Game of Thrones. And so there's this animation studio that employs several really killer animators and illustrators. And one of them is Fernando Mendoza. And I've linked in the show notes as well. And he does these great Game of Thrones scenes using illustration style that looks very similar to Disney movies, especially from the 80s, whether it be from Beauty and the Beast or Aladdin. Very much those color schemes and those styles. And it's a lot of fun, man. Have you taken a look at this guy's DeviantArt?
Oh, yeah, no, I did. I took a look right before the show. I've actually seen his stuff before. I must have been linked to it from somewhere.
Some of this stuff, I think it first started coming out, some of his first pieces that he did for this series started coming out in 2014, mm-hmm. but he's recently added more, so it's kind of brought it back up again.
I really enjoy the Arya and the Hound piece.
Yeah, that was my... I love the Bram and Hodor piece where Bram is riding Hodor and he's carrot sticking him with a big
like a roast chicken.
Roast chicken.
Yeah, no, that was pretty good. That was
and the White Walker is beautiful too. It's kind of got it's very much done in that style of Hercules. I don't remember the Hercules one, but that was
It's like he looks like Hercules, but then the background is all frozen.
Right,
like it's exactly. He's got sparkles and glitter coming out of his butt and his fingers as he's kind of like it's almost like the White Walker is prancing through the ice castle. It's really it's kind of funny. Like if you could imagine Game of Thrones on ice, this would be
right.
This would be what you would get.
everything is so dark, but it's so fun here. Like the Tyrion Lannister is Tyrion drinking on a bed, but he looks very much in the style of Quasimodo, mm-hmm. of the Hunchback of Notre Dame, kind of.
Yep.
So you got those colors, those color schemes going on.
Yeah, no, it's very, very well done. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on the citadelcafe.com/live. Our mobile audio stream is provided by Alpha Geek Radio. TuneIn.alphageekradio.com is where you can find our show and listen at Channel 1 at Showtime. Music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod, and the episode will be available on demand via iTunes and our website, thecitadelcafe.com. Email the show to tell us how wrong we are at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com, or just find us my name on Twitter and Facebook. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I am up to online at joelduggan.com. A big thank you, as always, to our 17 supporters on Patreon. Patreons like Ryan Murphy of the Gamers Inn and Zombies Ate My Podcast, friend of the show and a frequent guest here on the Citadel Cafe. He's a patron, so check out his work. And if you want to become a patron, check out patreon.com/Joel Duggan. For as little as $1 a month, you can help support the Citadel Cafe as well as my webcomic, Starcrossed. And we have an announcement. The first milestone goal of $100 per month has been met. Thank you to everybody that's made that possible. It means that our Adobe Creative Cloud subscription is secure. The next milestone is going to be $150 a month, and that is when StarCrossedOnline.com gets a redesign and the removal of all ad revenue. Or not revenue, but ads from the site will be gone. You guys will be supporting the site full tilt, which would be amazing. So that is patreon.com/Joel Duggan. And my name is where you can find me on Twitter and Tumblr, and just about anywhere else you can think of. Instagram has been a lot of fun, especially this weekend with the conference that I went to. Where, Brian, where can people find you online?
Of course, you can follow me on the Twitter at TheBrianDunaway, all one word. Also can follow me on my website. I guess you don't really follow people on the website, but you can go to my website at BrianDunaway.com. And that links to everything, my Facebook, my Instagram, my DeviantArt page that I haven't set up yet. It's going to be on there. I do have a Tumblr. I have one of those. Do you have a Tumblr, Joel?
I do. I'm not sure if I'm following you on Tumblr. I should check it out.
You should totally follow me on Tumblr. I haven't updated in months. Maybe if I had a new follower, I'd be excited and start posting stuff to it. But I always do stuff on Twitter. If I fork out anywhere, it's always from there.
You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
Happy birthday again, brother.